operationally, where does e-com sit? And the question I suggest people answer is not what does an e-com platform have to do functionally, but what is the role of an e-commerce platform in our systems architecture?
It's the E-commerce Master Plan podcast, here to help you solve your marketing problems and grow your e-commerce business. Cutting through the hype to bring you inspiration and advice from the e-commerce sector and beyond. Here's your host, Chloe Thomas.
Hello and welcome. It's great to have you here. Thank you for hitting play and choosing to listen to one of our inspiring guests. Insanely, we have never had this guest on the show for a whole episode before, which is a disservice to you, to me, and to him. So we are correcting that today. And yes, he has been on the show a couple of times, sharing a bit of advice in some of our top tips episodes, but we've never had him on for a whole show. So this episode is going to be all about the tech stack and replatforming. It's a what would you do episode, and the what would you do question is if you were replatforming in 2026. And we'll be going through tech, we'll be going through managing the big opinions above you, we'll go through managing everybody else, we'll go through change management, reducing friction, we'll talk a bit about Shopify, lots of cool stuff coming up in this episode that's really going to help you out with your tech stacks this year. Please listen to the end of the episode so you don't miss out on my guest's top tips and my own take on everything we discuss. At our sister podcast, Keep Optimizing, we are counting down the weeks until we release episode 300. Yeah, 300. Baby sister is getting big. It's crazy to reach that milestone. And we are going to be celebrating it by releasing content, the episode and a few other bits and bobs, that's even more useful and helpful than what we usually release every week on the Keep Optimizing podcast. There's also the opportunity for you to be a part of it all. To find out how to get involved, go to keepopt.com/300. That's keepopt.com/300. And that way, you can become a part of our Keep Optimizing episode 300 celebrations. Have you yet downloaded our ebook? To celebrate reaching episode 500, we've created an epic e-commerce success-focused ebook for you, packed with 500 top tips about how to make your e-commerce store more profitable, featuring the advice of many, many past guests alongside industry experts and many of you as well, our listeners. I've checked every single tip and organise the whole thing into sections for you, making it super easy to dip in and dip out and take inspiration as and when you need it. This ebook needs to be sat on your desktop or even printed and sat on your desk. Download your free copy right now at ecmp.info/ebook. Get 2024's most valuable e-commerce ebook now, ecmp.info/ebook. And now to introduce our special guest. James Gerd is the digital juggler and host of the Inside Commerce podcast. He has over 20 years' experience helping B2C and B2B brands deliver e-commerce growth, primarily through tech stack optimization, from agency and tech selection through to team training and project leadership. Hello, James.
Hey, Chloe. Lovely to chat to you again. Thanks for inviting me on.
Always a pleasure to catch up with you, sir. And I'm very excited. We're getting you on the podcast for the first ever proper time today, which is long overdue.
I know, I'm excited as well because you are the queen of podcasts in an e-com. So this is awesome. I'm happy to be on it and hope the listeners get something valuable from it.
Oh, I think they will. As you and I both know, replatforming can be a nightmare when done badly.
Yeah, I was at a panel last week for the agency's Shopify agency, Swanky, and one of my clients was there. And I worked with him last year, Lily's Kitchen Replatform. He said to me, I don't understand why anybody would willingly do this as a job repeatedly.
Back in the day, I also did vaguely similar to what you do now when life was a lot simpler and I had to give it up because it was just too much. So I take my hat off to you for being up for doing this. But before we get into the nitty gritty of replatforming, how did you end up in the world of e-commerce? Which I'm not sure is a question I've ever actually asked you.
Oh, I'll give you the short answer, not the War and Peace, so people don't fall asleep. But funnily enough, I had this conversation with a few people last week. And I think it is I got to a point where I didn't enjoy being an employee in an agency. I worked for an agency that delivered projects that ran digital marketing. I headed up the account management digital marketing. I didn't actually enjoy, I don't think I was well suited to being a senior leader in an agency environment. It was about recognizing what I like and don't like. And actually what I do like is being able to choose what I do and being in control of what I do versus having to deliver what something else needs me to. I think that personality bit of me shied away from that pressure of the agency. And I went solo and I kind of winged it to see whether it would work. And I was luckily, I had a decent enough network that I built up through my days previously of working a lot of the e-consultancy crew. And I picked a few projects and I realized I really liked it. I liked the ability to choose what I do, work with really cool brands, and also be able to select what I don't do. And I think that's massively important. As an independent consultant, I can be very strict about the type of project that I don't want to work on. Whereas if you work for an agency, you can't be like that because it's disruptive.
I love that bit of picking the right projects to work on, which I think the smaller the business is, and you and I both run very solo businesses, it becomes ever more critical, doesn't it? Because you are probably doing what we do in order to enjoy it. And therefore, working on a difficult project that you don't enjoy, and difficult and enjoy are two very different factors, I should say, in that, you know, they're all difficult, but they're not difficult, difficult. And before I take us down that rabbit hole, James, let me get us back to our actual topic. You're here to do one of our What Would You Do episodes, and your chosen What Would You Do is if you were embarking on a replatform in 2026. So before we actually get into what to do if you were embarking on a replatform in 2026, should one be replatforming in 2026? Let's ask you that question first. Is it worth doing?
I love it. This is like, Mark, for those of my vintage, this is like mastermind, your chosen specialist subject is. So how do you unpick that, Chloe? That's one hell of a question to start with, isn't it? Let's see
my. I know it's like a whole podcast series, but I guess what I mean is, what are the reasons why it's good to replatform? What should you be thinking about before you go, we want to do an incredibly difficult project this year?
So I think the most important thing is this, is you have to have a reason to need to replatform. If you don't have a valid business reason and a business case, then you are doing it for no clear reason or for wrong intention. So there are common signposts for when a business is on the wrong tech stack. And just to caveat that, it doesn't mean that your e-com platform is wrong. It could be that this tech stack that it sits in and around is wrong and it's constraining your operation and it's impeding roadmaps and growth plans. But the number one is cost. So the cost is scaling too fast as you grow because the amount of support and maintenance you need, the amount of technical fixes, amount of plugins, all that stuff. And so actually it's not just your OPEX cost, but more CAPEX is coming in than expected and it's unsustainable. It could be that you're on a platform where your feature set is falling behind where market leaders are. And we'll talk about the likes of Shopify, for example, in this inevitably. But there are certain platforms that are really pushing R&D ahead rapidly and they're investing massively and therefore the feature gap is growing. And the cost of then turning on those features through custom development or other third-party tools and the licenses becomes prohibitive. And then it is, yeah, it's process. It's where you cannot effectively execute the way your business needs to do processes, whether it's around product data uploads and publishers, or it's around order management, without creating a Frankenstein that is unsupportable or is painful, or having to hack processes that the business users don't want to follow because they're a pain in the ass to manage and scale. So those are the normally things where if any one of those is true, that then gives you like a credible reason why you should explore.
I love the simplicity of that. If it's costing the business, the opportunity cost, the financial cost, or the efficiency cost, it makes it seem so straightforward. So anyone listening who's thinking of replatforming, who isn't feeling the pain of cost, pause, please pause. But you mentioned Shopify there, and we've definitely moved, rightly or wrongly, into a world where, dare we say it, we're a little bit Shopify first, like they're the first name put on the tender for a replatform. And I'm sure there's plenty of people whose boards are turning around and going, we need to go to Shopify for whatever reason. It almost feels like Shopify is the IBM, you know, aging ourselves here. I suspect half our listeners won't know what this phrase comes from, but the whole nobody ever got fired for buying IBM, even if it didn't work. It kind of feels like we're in that space. What's your take on the Shopify impact on all of this?
I think what you have is there's an underlying reason why Shopify is becoming a market leader, but it's a market leader for a particular type of project right now. D2C e-commerce, 100%. SME e-commerce, 100%. Non-complex custom business process flows, e-commerce, 100%. And that is basically 80% of your market. B2B, it's increasingly becoming good because they've rolled out greater functionality into their B2B suite, better customization of front ends, better capability around account management, pricing, discounts, but it's still not there in complex B2B, complex manufacturing, etc. So you've got pockets where it isn't naturally geared towards it, and therefore you could use it, but you'd have to do a lot of custom development or third parties or more middleware. The reality is that because of that and because of how good they are at marketing, Shopify are really smart at their marketing. Editions is a work of art. They've invested massively in their business development. They speak to all retailers. So you've got not only the reality of the product, but you've got the distortion of actually how aggressive and how successful they are in their go-to-market strategy. That changes narratives because they are in talking to more retailers. And I was chatting to a few consultants over the last few months. I see less projects for, James, can you help me pick technology? And more projects for, we've chosen X, which is often Shopify. We need help because we don't know what to do and how to manage this project. So I think there's the market, but the important thing is that it's not suitable to every business, but also it could be really the right platform for you. However, it can have a cost implication to your current cost model that you haven't thought through. And if you don't think that through properly before making that selection decision, you could end up coming unstuck by having a cost line in a project that you've not budgeted for, that your CFO might turn around and go, we're not paying that. And payments is a great example. So I think it's never right to say yes, but to have a hypothesis that says, we think Shopify is the right one and this is why, let's try and prove this now. That is a totally acceptable approach.
So when you have someone who comes to you and goes, we've decided to go to Shopify, can you help us? Is your first thing to challenge that decision or to double check that decision?
Double check, because as a consultant, I can't do a job if I don't know why you're making a decision. And I'm not a good consultant if I come in and just blindly accept what you've done without understanding the context. So I want to know where stage you're at. Are you contract side? Or is it's past the gatekeeper for approval, but it hasn't gone to the board yet? Has it been fully costed? You've got a proper cost model. I often come in with people, we're going to go to Shopify, can you come and help us? And I come in and there isn't a proper TCO done. Somebody's looked at a license fee and a ballpark development cost for an agency, but they haven't validated that cost model. And actually they've got costs missing, or they've understated them, or they've overstated them. See, I want to understand the context, not disruptively, but if I can understand that, I can help them avoid bad decisions, or I can help them negotiate better. Or if they say, well, we thought, but we're not really sure, then I can say, well, okay, slow it down. Let's put a proper decision process behind this. And you don't have to spend months agonizing. You could do it quite quickly. But if you put that structure in up front, then you would hope that people buy into a decision better. And therefore, people then know why they're moving in a direction.
So for anyone who's wondering, TCO is total cost of ownership. So that's a spreadsheet of the full forensic level costing, which you should be doing for any of these projects. Anything else you are checking in with people before you commit and agree to the project and so on and so forth? Anything else? I guess what I'm actually trying to ask, James, is if someone's thinking of doing a replatform this year, what else do they need to make sure they've got in place before they sign any contracts or sign off any budgets?
So I always start with internal alignment. We know it, don't we? Let's face it, Chloe. These projects are not simple. They do involve stress. They involve disruption to the business because they take a lot of resource. There are complexities, there are known unknowns, unknown unknowns. And so you do get stress throughout these projects. Therefore, if you don't have complete alignment where you have proper C-suite or senior leadership team buy-in and everyone's bought into it, therefore working together, if you don't and you create friction where it's not expected, you end up potentially losing support or you end up really annoying people, and that is disruptive to the project. So the number one thing is, has a proper business case been created? If so, is it robust? If that is, great, but has it got sign off? And do we have everyone at the senior leadership on board? Not just the e-com lead, the finance person, the ops person, all those critical decision makers whose teams you are going to rely on in the project. That's my absolute non-negotiable, because if the answer is no, then that's got to be done before you start even contemplating delivering a project and going to the next stage.
Yeah, you need their agreement at every single stage, not, oh, by the way, we're going live in 2 weeks' time. Can you set up our payment integrations? It's like...
That's a classic. And also the, oh, yes, so CFO, I know you weren't consulted on that. And somebody just said at a board meeting that, yeah, we're going to look at a platform. We've now decided on Shopify, but let me just give you a nasty surprise that your payments rate is going up by one decimal point. Like, what? Sorry? Where have you taken me on the journey, and how have we reached a consensus about what the business case for this is? Because sometimes, and there's a misnomer that replatforming is a cost reduction exercise, and this is not the right way to think about it. Is what are you trying to achieve? What are your goals? What are your success criteria? And what are your outcomes? And does that require investment to achieve that? And is that investment justified because of an ROI, whatever that might be? It could be you don't need three headcounts that you thought you're going to have because you've got a better platform and tool in, but actually you've had to spend an extra 200K capex in order to get there. So it's all these discussions that have to be had first, because if you don't frame it right, you do not bring people in to a consensus of opinion.
So we've got the goals aligned. We've got the internal team aligned. We haven't yet talked about the tech stack. So is there anything we need to look at from a tech stack front? I mean, obviously there is, James, but you know, I won't roll with my question here. Is there anything from a tech stack piece that it's essential to check before you even go out trying to work out what platform you're moving to?
Yeah, that's a good question. So 100%, my funnel is strategic, business case, and the consensus and governance bit first. Then it is operationally, where does e-com sit? And the question I suggest people answer is not what does an e-com platform have to do functionally, but what is the role of an e-commerce platform in our systems architecture? Is it just basically a payment gateway and a product catalog? Or is it everything? And it's got to have capability for like custom order management flows. And actually, we need it to have some to enable personalization. You suddenly start to change the picture of what an e-com platform is, what it needs to deliver. And then it's about how it's got to fit in. So what are the other systems that it needs to play with? Are there existing middlewares in place? All of these questions have an impact, because some platforms have really good integrations with certain middlewares, or they've got proven data flow connectors with A, B, and C ERP, enterprise resource planning tool for those who have not heard of it before, versus another platform which doesn't have those connectors. And therefore, you're going to add cost and complexity and time into your product. So yeah, fundamentally, you've got to understand where e-com sits and what its role is within that wider systems architecture.
And presumably that's the point as well, where you start to understand if you're going to have to change other things as well. Because, you know, we often see businesses go, right, we're going to upgrade to another platform. Then we start growing and then we realize we need an ERP, or we can't use X as our copy and paste held together with sticky back plastic op system. Suddenly there's almost a domino effect of other upgrades that happen. Is this the point at which you'd start outlining those as well?
Yeah, this is why it's hard, because no replatform is ever the same. And you sometimes have a project where there is another part of the business, and it's typically like an internal IT function, where they are either upgrading or changing part of the ERP. So either the core ERP, whether it's a NetSuite, a Dynamics, or they built an in-house, I've got a client in-house, and they go into a third-party specialist in Business Central. But they're using a specific retail vertical version of that, which has its own set of dependencies, and or somebody's changing the warehouse management systems and they have a requirement where the warehouse management system pushes directly into e-com to send fulfillment statuses rather than through the ERP. And you have to tease out the data flows. And I think for those who think crisis sounds way complicated, is think about data flows and not tech. Because when you think about tech, it becomes, I don't understand an ERP. What's Dynamics? What's Business Central? It's like, forget that. How does data need to flow between systems to execute on your trading plans and your order management? So how does an order need to get into a warehouse? And how does e-commerce need data back from it? How does a product get into your e-com? How does a stock update get in? And it's understanding those data flows and understanding the systems that are now in control and where there might be gaps or issues and how they're changing, or where there might be a new system being introduced. Because then you can start to say, okay, right, so I'm looking at platform A for e-commerce. I know that I'm using platform B for my ERP. Is there a proven case study showing that these are integrated? What level of complexity is this going to cause for me? And if the answer is, do you know what? They don't play well together. That then makes you have to question internally, okay, so does this project need to be wider than it currently is? Do we need to involve more people in the decision because it's got greater dependencies?
Presumably, I mean, I'm going to mention it, AI. I'm guessing that's getting pulled in more and more into replatforming projects. How can we take advantage of AI? How can we build an AI-ready system? As we know, many AI projects are falling over due to data issues. So is that something you're building in at this stage as well, what the AI potential and opportunity is?
I think this is a bit of a blurry line at the moment, because it presumes that a business has an AI strategy. And I think it's fair to say that many don't. lots of businesses are using AI tooling, but they're using it tactically. So someone in the content team might be using AI to generate alt tags for images, or someone in the SEO side is doing it for SEO optimized content. But is there an overall strategy about what the role of AI is? How does it fit operationally? What is it meant to do from an automation and a process efficiency point of view, from a data management point of view? I think that's what's lacking, that AI governance. If I then strip that back to what's practical in replatforming, the number one thing is, what are the core processes that take up your team's time where they're having to do repetitive tasks, which are tedious, and you'd much rather those e-com execs, CRM execs have more time to do value add, focus on like revenue driving growth activities, and also give them a more enjoyable job. That's where the focus should be, is then you've got use cases to explore with tech companies to say, well, you've got six scenarios. We want to know how your AI tooling will help us to do this better. That's a far better way, I think, of approaching it, rather than just trying to think about it in a more nebulous, open way.
And changing tack completely from AI to human beings, it's fair to say once then you get up and running and the project is happening, it's as much about people as it is about tech in a larger business as well, isn't it? Bringing them along on the journey with you?
Yeah, definitely. And I think this is an area that's often overlooked. And it's overlooked not because of bad intentions, but because when you get into a project and the project is frenetic and you've got tasks coming out of your ears and you've got fires to put out, is you forget some of the core principles you build a project on. And that's why it's critical to have a strong project lead and a project manager to keep the team focused on those and not lose track. So I think building consensus for change is massive. And it's about communicating with people how they need to be, because you've got all different levels. I mean, you've got C-suite who don't want to be bombarded with the minutiae of detail and be involved in every call. They want to know, are we on track? Are we on budget? Is the project being delivered effectively? Are we hitting our outcomes? And we need to keep them engaged and updated on that basis. Then you've got senior management who want to know what the impact of their team is. Is their particular team's needs being catered for and not forgotten? And then you've got what I call the doers, the subject matter experts, who are involved either consistently, so content people are generally and product people throughout, or periodically. So maybe the buyers are inputting every now and then to help you refine the data model. So it's about making sure that you keep communicating and sharing back to them anything that's relevant to them, and you give them a opportunity to feedback, ask questions. So town halls are good ways of doing it. Everyone can join in if they want to. Run them every X weeks, months, and people can just join in and ask questions. Doing, as you get further into the project, more regular stand-ups where you get people on the call and you just get them to raise any questions in advance so you can tackle them. So yeah, I think communication is critical. It's just not losing sight that people need to be told what's happening.
We've covered an awful lot there, James, on the what would you do if you were embarking on a replatform in 2026. Is there anything we've missed that the audience really need to know about, or any final thought you've got for those who are embarking on this year?
I think a couple of things would be, is you've got to have contingency in a project. Projects can run over budget and products can run over time. If you've got such a tight time frame that there's no slippage at all and you've got no contingency in a budget, what happens if something comes up that's a critical issue? You can't throw more money at it to add more development resource to fix it. So that either means you compromise your scope or you compromise your time frame. So build contingency, time and money, so that you have a buffer. So I always say 15 to 20% on your CapEx for a contingency to cover unknown unknowns. And always plan in 1 to 2 sprints buffer to pad out time when you get into like user acceptance testing and launch planning. And sprints normally are over 2 weeks. That's really important. The next thing is to understand that friction is inevitable in a project. And friction could be somebody being ill and not being able to complete a task. It could be disagreement, and that can be healthy or it can be unhealthy. It can be people butting heads, or it can be people thinking, we haven't got this right. We need to debate this until we're absolutely certain this is the right outcome for this particular task. But you've got to educate people on what project friction is, and not to fear it and not to think it's bad, and to say that if somebody challenges what you're requesting, don't take it personally. It's because we want to get the right outcomes. But the people running the project team have got to make sure it's done in a productive and a constructive way, and ensure that people feel supported. If they get something wrong, they're not punished, that they get explained what the issue is, help them to get it right, and help them to feel a valuable part of the team. And that all leads into my final point, which is another exciting acronym, Chloe, for your wonderful listeners, RACI, which is basically a mapping of the project roles you need to deliver a project, like a project manager, project lead, subject matter experts, sponsors. And it's listing all the core tasks and mapping who's responsible, who's accountable, who gets consulted, who gets informed, and making sure that people know what their role is and they know what they're responsible for. Those bits, they sound dull, but they're fundamental because they then give you a reference point to come back to in the project and go, are we keeping our governance on track?
E-commerce Master Plan is supported by some of the greatest companies in the e-commerce sector. Here's a reminder of who they are.
At our sister podcast, Keep Optimizing, we are counting down the weeks until we release episode 300. Yeah, 300. Baby sister is getting big. It's crazy to reach that milestone. And we are going to be celebrating it by releasing content, the episode and a few other bits and bobs, that's even more useful and helpful than what we usually release every week on the Keep Optimizing podcast. There's also the opportunity for you to be a part of it all. To find out how to get involved, go to keepopt.com/300. That's keepopt.com/300. And that way you can become a part of our Keep Optimizing episode 300 celebrations. Have you yet downloaded our ebook? To celebrate reaching episode 500, we've created an epic e-commerce success-focused ebook for you, packed with 500 top tips about how to make your e-commerce store more profitable, featuring the advice of many, many past guests alongside industry experts and many of you as well, our listeners. I've checked every single tip and organize the whole thing into sections for you, making it super easy to dip in and dip out and take inspiration as and when you need it. This ebook needs to be sat on your desktop or even printed and sat on your desk. Download your free copy right now at ecmp.info/ebook. Get 2024's most valuable e-commerce ebook now, ecmp.info/ebook.
It's time for the top tips round.
Okay, I love this section because it gives me and our listeners some really quick ideas for taking our businesses to the next level. James, are you ready for the top tips?
Always.
The book top tip then, if everyone listening to this podcast agreed to take Friday off and read a book to make their business better, which book would you recommend?
So I nearly misread this and thought it says, which book am I enjoying reading at the moment? Then I realised you said about business, so I changed it. So Webs of Influence by Natalie Nahai. I've been a long time fan of hers for many, many years when I came across her as part of the e-consultancy network. So she's a specialist in the convergence of psychology of consumer behaviour and online shopping, marketing, etc. So the book is an amazing perspective into psychological principles and how you can use them to improve your site. So it's not about manipulating, but improving your site to better target and deliver good user experience for customers.
Ooh, excellent recommendation. And we're always happy to have a fiction book, you know, for future reference. That's fine too. Traffic top tip. Which marketing method do you either prize above all others or think doesn't get the press it deserves?
Can I have two or do I have to be completely? Because I'm a consultant. I'm terrible at focusing.
You can have two.
So first one, direct mail. And I know that you've covered a lot of conversation around direct mail on your pod, but I'm going to pull out a very specific thing because direct mail is how long's a piece of string. So direct mail follow-ups to first online orders, sending somebody something nice. And this works a bit better with more upmarket, like premium brands. I've worked really nicely. We can do a really targeted insert, just something a bit more personal, a bit more tangible, something you can hold on to. I think that's a really nice touch. And I've seen a few retailers do that well.
And you said you wanted two?
Reddit. Not enough people use Reddit as a source for getting like brand authority and expertise, and also really good from an SEO point of view.
Awesome. Yeah, hearing more and more about Reddit, one I need to look more deeply into, I think. Right, the tool top tip, maybe a collaboration tool, a social media plugin, a phone app, or just a way of working. Is there a cool little tool you use that makes you and your team more efficient day to day?
This is the hardest one because as you do with your e-com tech stuff, and there's just so many, I'm just pulling out one that I've used recently that's really helped me. So Google Sheets and Gemini. So I've had to do a lot of data importing and data cleansing, reformatting. Example is migrating blog data out of WordPress into Shopify. And it's just, you can't get from one system to another clean. It's just full of old crap HTML, ASCII characters. So I basically use Google Sheets and Gemini to clean up and set rules. And basically, because it can run Python commands and you can get it pretty clean. I have used ChatGPT in the past, but with Gemini, you can do it direct in Google Sheets. So it's quite nice.
Ooh, nice geeky recommendation there. We like that. And then finally, the carbon top tip. What's your favourite way to reduce the carbon footprint of an e-commerce store?
I was going to be flippant and say stop trying to sell as much as possible. Sell less, better quality, but that's a bit too flippant.
But maybe flippant, but also 100% spot on.
That's the problem, isn't it?
It is.
The one I'm going to pull out is because I saw a really good, it's about packaging and about the fact that you do not need really expensive embossed packaging that's not made from sustainable materials and it can't be recycled or fully recycled. You don't need it. And I've had this conversation with a few premium brands and I saw a couple of bold ones a good few years back who decided that they went early. And it wasn't just because of the environment, it was also to cut costs. But they went and they tested just plain recyclable packaging and found that actually it had no negative impact at all on conversion rate. And it therefore increased their margin, because the costs were much lower and it was also enabled them to have a more sustainable angle.
Yeah, I mean, I do think that packaging is the most popular answer to this question. And I think it is probably the best answer to this question for three reasons. One, it saves you cost. Two, it's good for the planet. And three, it's the most noticeable thing to consumers. And it's the thing they rant about the most about brands is you stupidly sized boxes.
Yeah.
Or overly large amounts of packaging or packaging you can't recycle. So it wins on so many levels. And of course, one of the worst things you can do is pay to transport lots of air around the world. So small packaging is also good.
That's a spot on point, actually, because I had one the other day. I ordered something for my daughter. This massive box came and I thought, what if we ordered this big? And it was about 60% air with those, you know, those inflated plastic sacks inside, which I know they are from recyclable materials, but it's totally unnecessary. So they then have to get popped, which my dog hates, and then they have to get in, put in the recycling bin to be recycled for no reason.
Yeah, I do quite like the way that Amazon in particular now is frequently sending out boxes without any packaging at all. You know, so you order an electronics item and it just arrives with a sticker on it, which I know doesn't work everywhere in the world, but in my very rural part of the UK, where, trust me, nobody is going to be stealing parcels off my doorstep, she says, famous last words. But it's like, why would you put that vacuum in another box when it's in a perfectly good box already?
Yeah, exactly.
But before we go even deeper into our own rants about packaging, James, would you please let the listeners know where they can get in contact with you if they have questions or want your help in their replatforms or other tech stack challenges this year?
Yes, I prefer carrier pigeon because that's my era of e-com from my IBM days as well, Chloe. So LinkedIn, you can find me, James Gerd, on LinkedIn, and also check out the Inside Commerce podcast. That's always a good way to find out about us, contact me, and you're welcome to sign up. We run a bi-weekly newsletter for Inside Com, which shares our views on the e-com world. But if it is a specific conversation, connect with me on LinkedIn and drop me a DM.
And definitely listen to James's podcast and newsletter because it is must read and must consume to keep on top of what's going on in tech, especially here in the UK. James, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. I suspect you have saved many people days and weeks of agony with your advice in this one. So huge thanks for sharing it all with us.
Most welcome. Thank you for inviting me on. Always enjoy chatting to you, Chloe, and I hope everyone's enjoyed the episode.
Always a treat to catch up with James. And I really do believe if you pay attention to what he's just taken you through, you will have much, much more successful and less painful as well replatforming activity this year. He took us through the people side of it, both above you and below you, the tech side and the whole change management thing, which I think these days is almost as big as the tech side of it all. You can get your hands on our notes from the episode, including those top tips and links to what we mentioned by heading over to ecommercemasterplan.com. You can also use our direct episode short links to get there. That's ecmp.info/the number of this episode. And don't forget to get yourself on our email list when you reach the site. If you liked this episode, then make sure you check out episode 367, where I'm chatting with Ashley Hubbard from Grenson Shoes about their replatforming journey. And if you want more of our WWIDs, our What Would You Do episodes, then head to ecmp.info/WWID and you'll find a page with all of them listed for you. Thank you for tuning into this and every episode of the E-commerce Master Plan podcast. I bring you a new interview every week because I want to inspire and help you to succeed and thrive with your businesses, including progressing along the path to net zero. So if you know someone this show can help, please tell them to listen to the E-commerce Master Plan podcast. I hope you have a great week and don't forget to keep optimizing.
Thank you for listening to the E-commerce Master Plan podcast. Find out more at ecommercemasterplan.com/podcast.
At our sister podcast, Keep Optimizing, we are counting down the weeks until we release episode 300. Yeah, 300. Baby sister is getting big. It's crazy to reach that milestone. And we are going to be celebrating it by releasing content, the episode and a few other bits and bobs, that's even more useful and helpful than what we usually release every week on the Keep Optimizing podcast. There's also the opportunity for you to be a part of it all. To find out how to get involved, go to keepopt.com/300. That's keepopt.com/300. And that way, you can become a part of our Keep Optimizing episode 300 celebrations. Have you yet downloaded our ebook? To celebrate reaching episode 500, we've created an epic e-commerce success-focused ebook for you, packed with 500 top tips about how to make your e-commerce store more profitable, featuring the advice of many, many past guests alongside industry experts and many of you as well, our listeners. I've checked every single tip and organize the whole thing into sections for you, making it super easy to dip in and dip out and take inspiration as and when you need it. This ebook needs to be sat on your desktop or even printed and sat on your desk. Download your free copy right now at ecmp.info/ebook. Get 2024's most valuable e-commerce ebook now, ecmp.info/ebook.